Packaged fast food and soft drink businesses continue to grow around the world. Also rising are instances of diabetes and obesity. According to Euromonitor, over the past decade, there's been a 92% increase in the sale of packaged food. Estimates indicate that in 2012, sales could reach $2.2 trillion. In terms of fast food, McDonald's, Subway and KFC combined have now built more than 80,000 stores. Soft drink sales have doubled over the last 10 years to $532 billion per annum, and forecasts expect growth to continue. To talk about the prevalence of these food products and the role companies can play in dealing with health issues, we're joined by Professor Boyd Swinburne of Deakin University. Professor, welcome to Summer Breakfast.
Good morning, John.
Now, in a recent article in The Economist, you're reported to have been troubled by the role food companies play in shaping government policy aimed at addressing obesity. Now, what concerns you?
Well, governments set the agenda, the policy, the general direction and offer for society and for the economy. And in general, they're wanting more growth, more exports and so on. Companies then respond to that and do what they're designed to do, which is to make a profit. But one of the side effects of that, of course, is the products that they're producing are actually causing a number of problems, including obesity and diabetes. So we've got companies doing what they know best, which is to sell products to us and to create profits, and we've got problems that are related to that. And governments, I think, now need to step up and say, well, we have to change the rules somehow so that we don't get all this ill health from companies going about their normal business.
So are food companies taking measures to increase the nutritional value of food?
So food companies are clearly aware of the problem of obesity and diabetes, but they're caught in a very difficult dilemma because some of the actions which are required to bring down obesity, and for example, reducing junk food marketing, which is targeting children, is one that comes up on a regular basis, and taxes and subsidies to promote healthy consumption and discourage unhealthy food consumption. Those kinds of things might eat into their profits. So while they're wanting to do something about the epidemics, some of the actions actually run against their profit model and their business model. So what we've seen companies do around the world is certainly get onto the front foot and try to prevent regulations happening in the space and say, we're going to do things, we're going to reformulate, we're going to put voluntary restrictions on marketing and so on in an effort to at least show that they're doing something. Now, the problem is that most of these efforts either have not been evaluated or when they have been evaluated have found not to be effective. And so that's the problem, is that the industry taking us on for itself and doing things is actually just giving us business as usual, which is a growth in obesity and diabetes.
Yeah, doesn't it come down, though, to personal choice, Professor? Isn't that the issue, that it's someone's choice to eat foods that are not particularly good for them?
Yes, that's the line, and indeed we do have choice. Countries like Australia, there's an enormous amount of food choice, but what are the foods within those thousands of products that are most heavily promoted, that are reducing in relative terms in relation in price, that are promoted at the end of aisles or on TV and so on, that are most readily available? And you'll find it's the more packaged foods, the more processed foods. You don't see that many advertisements for fruit and vegetables. They're not promoted at end of aisle sales and so on. So the foods that tend to be the most heavily promoted, put in front of us all the time. You don't, when you go into a petrol station and pay for petrol, you're not stretching over a whole pile of carrots and potatoes and apples to pay your bill, hoping them hoping that you're going to make an impulse purchase of fruit and vegetables, it's chocolate bars and snacks and soft drink and so on. So, yes, we do have personal choice, but we have to realise that what we choose is heavily dependent on what's available to us, what's promoted, and the price of it.
Well, yeah, but I can see enormous difficulties here, as indeed you can, because do not each of these companies have a fiduciary duty to shareholders to maximise their opportunities to garner profits?
Well, absolutely they do, and that's really the main duty that they have. They don't actually have a duty to improve public health. And so if governments or people want to ensure that companies are operating so that they are not undermining public health, then we need to set up some rules and regulations and boundaries within which they can legally operate. And the trouble is that I think that over the last 15 years or so of calling for government action by consumer groups and public health groups and parents groups to do something about this, they have rather fallen back on the sort of rather laissez-faire approach and just letting business sort it out for itself. And unfortunately, that just continues with business as usual and more diabetes and more obesity.
Now, how did you respond to the Nestlé company partnering with the International Diabetes Federation to work on education and prevention?
Well, there's a lot of world experience out there in terms of how big companies respond to public health threats, and it was led by Big Tobacco, and there's a whole lot of things that the tobacco industry did to try to prevent restrictions on its practice. Now, Big Food, and Nestlé is the biggest food company around, is actually following quite a few of those corporate responses. One of those responses is to fund charities and to fund research and to fund education. And in this instance, Nestlé struck up a deal with the International Diabetes Federation on some education programs. Now, that is might be fine in itself, but it does restrict the International Diabetes Federation being a strong advocate at a global level for changes in how food companies operate. If they are receiving, on one hand, money from the food companies, then they can't really go out and call for tighter restrictions, or makes it harder for them to go and call for tighter restrictions on how food companies operate. So it's a very smart tactic on Nestlé's part, we wrote a letter to the Lancet Medical Journal just saying or pointing out how restricting this will be for the International Diabetes Federation.
Yeah, well, it's becoming so serious an issue, is it not, that we're looking at the next generation being perhaps the first generation in a while where the life expectation is actually not as great as the one that's the generation before it.
Well, that's true. And if you look at the recent history of life expectancy, it's been an extraordinary rise in most countries. And the thing that is going to threaten that, and several projections have suggested that by the time this obesity epidemic that's now occurring in childhood, with, for example, in Australia, about one in four children being overweight or obese, once that follows through into adulthood, then the diabetes and the heart disease and strokes and the cancers are going to become more prevalent and occur at a younger age. And then that is going to start cancelling out these gains that we've had in life expectancy.
Indeed. Professor, thank you for joining us this morning on RN Summer Breakfast on what is an issue that arguably is going to get more and more complex as time goes on. Professor Boyd Swinburne joining us on RN Summer Breakfast, where it's 8:15.